So briefly describe the case study here. So this relates to a project that we are being working on in the city of Delhi, which is India's capital, a population of 14 million plus. It's a large metropolitan city. And also not free from disasters. It is in zone 4, so close to the Himalayan belt, and therefore it has its own problems of earthquakes. Flooding has become a major urban phenomena in Asia, and many cities around Asia have been suffering, and so has Delhi been. But this particular case study also speaks about the other kind of hazards that are very much manifest there. So public health related issues. Every year the cases of vector-borne diseases, chikungunya and dengue, which is again very typical now for many urban areas. And also, social problems that are becoming major issues for us. Why we had to include, traditionally SEEDS has been working in natural hazards, and so floods and earthquakes and other natural hazards come first to us. But here, when we go to the communities and we start working with them, especially in urban context, we found that, these kind of events take a backseat. It is these daily stresses and shocks that are bigger concern for them. Road safety is again one of them. So we started with something very narrow, but then we realized that if we really have to make it a citizen-driven initiative, then we will have to broaden the definition and scope of risks and how we define risks in an urban context. So that was one point. The second that I want to highlight is often it's very difficult to find an entry point or a starting point to do risk reduction work in an urban context. In rural areas, we find it relatively easier because one, the groups are more or less homogeneous, and it's easy to bring them together around existing community institution, and to bring in the agenda for DRR because it relates to directly to their natural environment. So whether it is agriculture, like the case of Happy, or anything else about their livestock, about their infrastructure, they can relate to disasters much more easily. And we found it relatively easier to talk about disasters in rural. But here in urban context, it was very difficult. And primarily in our part of the world, urban areas are places where people migrate from rural to urban areas in search of livelihood. So for them, their livelihood and basic survival is a prime necessity. And therefore, they are ready to compromise on everything else, including infrastructure, including the quality of life. And so it's, it's the mentality to adjust to whatever it is. So they are willing to live with risks and take the risk just because they have to earn their daily livelihoods. So finding an entry point was a difficult task for us, but how we did it was to start with some of the neighborhood associations that are already existing. Neighborhood associations are recognized by the local government. So they are institutions. They could have a lot of politics and a lot of dynamics, but at least they are institutions that are recognized by government. But then they don't have the agenda for risk reduction. So what we did was we did a kind of a rollout workshop where we brought all the neighborhood associations together and said that, let's look at risks which are actually affecting your quality of life. And it took us several rounds of such discussions before we found that yes, citizen forums, citizen associations in neighborhoods could come together on a common issue like risk reduction. But this has all this took us almost 2 years to come to that point where they were ready to take action. So that's the second issue that I wanted to highlight. Third area is, which I spoke about yesterday also, is about the issue around involving and mobilizing youth and in the process. We found that youth, adolescents particularly, were ready to come forward much more actively than other groups in urban contexts. Perhaps because there are colleges, there are institutions where they in any case congregate, and therefore, which is not so much in a rural setting, and large numbers can gather around cultural activities very quickly. So they have taken up risk reduction agenda very, very strongly, and we made it easier for them, or you know, sexier for them by introducing tools that are, you know, smart tools. So there was an app kind of thing developed which they could use to, you know, take pictures and share their views about risks in their own environment. And that that tagging would happen in a particular area and a kind of a crowdsourced risk information map gets created. And that becomes something that the government starts noticing and says, so we took that combined information to the local line department and they said, yes, this is something credible. This is going beyond your usual ways of confronting us and saying, you know, we need services. You're providing us with credible evidence, which makes my task easier to then, you know, provide you with a budget, with you know, mobilize my own department to solve that problem. So it happened with the electricity department, it happened with the police, it also happened with the water and sanitation department, and we could see results already. The last aspect I want to highlight is that when we do this work with citizens, one demand always comes out as, okay, so, you know, you are an external agency, a facilitator. What are you going to do for us? You know, there is that demand kind of thing. And it's not good enough to say that, oh, yeah, we are there only to facilitate your connection and, you know, enable you make your demands to the government, enable you to do your risk assessments. So what we did is we tried to speak to our donor to say that, can you fund small pilot projects which are citizen-led? And in this case, you know, UNICEF was supporting us, UNICEF India, and so they agreed. So there are small neighborhood-level activities that got funded, which are all community-driven. So things like closed-circuit television cameras in streets where there was problems of violence and abuse, especially against women. And so these CCTV cameras got installed. Certain streets got cleaned and this garbage cleaning happened as a result. Then there was something in schools that we did where they could recycle waste within the schools, you know, organic and waste and inorganic was segregated. So things like that, actually, we found that immediately after a demonstration project or a pilot project was inaugurated in the community, there was a fresh momentum from the community. They felt that, yes, you know, their efforts are leading to clear, tangible results. And I think that set further support towards that. So yeah, these are things I just wanted to highlight. I'll look forward to comments.
Thanks, Melvin. Very interesting. Let's turn to our readers.
So upon reviewing the case study from India, and I was happy to see that Abdi has highlighted the important role of youth in DRR, especially in implementing WASH activities. In the Philippines, we also strongly promote and advocate the participation of children and youth, not only as beneficiaries of urban resilience projects, but also as leaders. We do organizing work and involve children in schools as well as the children who are out of school. The Being Citizen application, wherein the mobile technology was used to engage the young generation in gathering risk information, is something new to me. We have DRR mobile apps in the Philippines, but mostly we use it for providing risk information, not for risk profiling. So the application is used for providing weather updates, providing contact information of relationships. So it's something new to me, and I find it really interesting. Considering that the local government can, as you've mentioned in the paper, the local government can both bring a change or create a barrier, I think further discussion on the complex governance system in the area is needed. It would be good to shed some light on the issues and concerns that inhibit the government from providing basic services to the locals. Besides the reason that the population size is huge. Also, to further strengthen the context and the example, there is also a need to further discuss the citizen forum, what triggered its formation, when was it formed, how does the forum operate, does it have a structure? Also, the role of different groups involved in the forum also needs elaboration, because mainly the case study highlighted the role of youth. So how about the role of the Residents Welfare Association, Women Market Association? So what exactly are they doing? WASH activities were primarily highlighted in the case, and it was mentioned that the local government was involved in the implementation. It would be good to specify their participation, what exactly did they do to ensure the regular provision of services for the community. Also, apart from WASH, is the forum engaged in other risk reduction activities to address other social and natural hazards? And also, I'm interested to know if, apart from SEEDS, are there other civil society organizations supporting the Citizen Forum? And my last question is on the sustainability. Does the forum have mechanisms to sustain its gains? Do they have like a concrete plan to continue their existing initiatives? Yeah. That's it.
Do I go?
Yeah.
Thank you. I think the case study was interesting for me, particularly the shift from intensive to extensive disasters.
Mm-hmm.
Because the experience we have is the focus so far has been on intensive disasters. You mentioned social hazards, drug abuse, road safety. Just mentioned now, and if teasing. You see, the experience we have is when we submitted some work sometime, I was giving to the reviewer said, no, don't mention, remove conflicts, remove road safety, it's not hazard. The paper you know, you read the paper. So we had to cut it down. But this highlights these issues. Which I think are driven by poverty and inequality in society. And this again highlights the importance of civil society in bringing out these issues, okay, in the society. These are everyday disasters. I think this is a good case to do the line between the intensive big earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and tsunamis and the everyday hazards that the community faces. It was quite interesting. What difference from your own work? Drainage and general social stress are common in our case in Cameroon. They are driven, of course, by poverty and inequality in the communities. But the idea of if-teasing, I found interesting. It's not a crisis. I mean, it's not a hazard. Nobody will mention it in Limba or even in Cameroon as a hazard. That too was interesting. And it will be interesting to know why this, the idea of if-teasing, I learned this word from this work, if-teasing and gang raping, excuse me for that, it's a little common in India. Now we get it on the news. Is there some social work that has been done in India and Pakistan? Why isn't that common? It would be interesting.
What's that?
I just mentioned Pakistan because you are neighbors. Okay. Now, if-teasing. If-teasing, they define as this idea of chatting up, yeah, women, society, because of the slum cohabitation. Okay, the society is poor, and then you have, it could be linked to diseases. Okay, that's what it means, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is there some social study, background study to why it is that rampant? Because we have other slum communities in the world. Okay, but it is a little unique in India, if I'm right. This idea of, you know, if this thing, and you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, here it is. I'll come back to it. Yeah.
Okay. The system of social waste management disposal was set up as one of the ways to solve the problems, using youth volunteers that were appointed to dispose waste. How effective and sustainable is this? Because our experience shows that in Limba, we use women who take more care of the house. We tell them, do not drop rubbish anywhere. When you collect, put rubbish in your house, collect it and drop it. The council provides the place where the rubbish can be dumped. But you can stay for weeks or days or weeks and no pickup truck will come, and then rats will come there. So it is directly linked to the problem of governance in the community. So how effective is your own case in India? Add to your own understanding, sorry. Yeah, social hazards so far considered in our case, even but not mentioned as priority. Well, I talked about already linked to pervasive poverty. I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay, so.
Manu, when I read this case study, I also reflected to the work that Yakum did when we assisting the community-based WASH program. In Indonesia, we have a national program called 100-0-100. Stands for 100% population access to clean water and 0% slum area and 100% population access to good sanitation. And with this national program, it is expected to be achieved in 2019. However, there is a policy from the government that no zero subsidy is allowed for the WASH program in Indonesia because it says that subsidy will lead to unsustained WASH program. So if we want to assist the community in WASH program, then we can do the triggering, creating the awareness, raising and demands, but we cannot give stimulant funds to build the WASH facilities. So I think you mentioned that there is a
stimulant funds come from the UNICEF, yeah. But is there any other stimulant funds given to the community, and how the stimulant funds be replicated? What is the resource mobilization mechanism is in place so that the WASP program can be accessed by all?
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is that you mentioned about the DRR is mapping and also mobilizing the youth. Can you explain more what are the uniqueness of these two approaches? Like when what we did is we engaged the people with disability in WASP program. So we make the women and youth with disability involved in the risk mapping and in designing the WASP program.
Mm.
So there is a before and after photos that, for example, previously the public toilets is located in a steep area with no handrails and also dark, so that it's also create another risk of peeping and harassment to women. And then after that, we give the lighting, and then we make the retrofitting to the public toilets, and also to ensure that the public toilet is not located in the landslide prone area, that kind of things. And also the design itself should be accessible for people with disabilities. So maybe if you could give more details on what are this youth perspective uniqueness in this WASP program, if it be give more insights to the reader. And I think, and also what about the you mentioned about the local advocacy to leverage resources from the local government. Is this with the what mechanism is there through the legislative or to the bottom up planning to the executive to the local government units? Or like in Indonesia we have the village funds amounted $100,000 per village. So what is the existing channels in India? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Just one remark and one question.
Mm-hmm. Please.
One remark, I'm very interested by your entry to say to a difficulty to enter in a urban context because the DRR is not visible. So I think all we have, if we have been approaching urban context, we are in the same. And second, so I don't know for Indian people, what does that mean, citizen? Because we use the word citizen foreign. Is it somebody well respected by other? Is somebody elected? Why is not people foreign? Because we use the word citizen, so does that mean anything or not? Or just.
Very interesting, and you have highlighted the difference between rural setting and urban setting. Of course, that's absolutely true. I'm interested to know, is the local government responsible for the issues you have mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
And if the local government is responsible, then why you have been trying to solve problems which are responsibility of the local government instead of putting pressure on the government, on the local government, which is accessible? Because we did similar things, not the way you have done it, which are very innovative, and now we thought that since there are a number of TV channels. One company has introduced TV channels which covers only one city. So now what we do, we inform the community groups. So if they have a problem in their area, they form the this TV channel that, look, this is, we have a problem in this area, and why don't you come and cover it? So they rush with their cameras and their wagon. And because now the government has come under tremendous pressure because of this, this is in Lahore, in Faisalabad, and they are opening up in many other cities. So if you go to the mayor's office or the deputy commissioner's office, they have a television and they are watching that. If this channel reaches there, the government immediately informed their people that rush, because now we have been made very shameful for that. So I'm not saying that you should not do this, but what I'm saying is that because if we are interested to improve governance, instead of doing work for the government, which model we should be adopting? Because I believe that as the public or private partnership concept has been imposed, literally imposed in most of our countries, and in fact, if we prepare the background of most of our MPs, they own private firms. So they are controlling the public space, but also the private. So most of the time, public-private partnership is basically conflict of interest. So as a result of that, the accountability, though we talk a lot about accountability, but what is happening, accountability does not take place.
Okay.
Thank you.
Maybe we should set how much time we have if you want to have tea at the end of this.
Tea.
Coffee.
Nice. 10 minutes, 20 minutes.
I think 20 minutes will get us to start at 22, which is okay. Is that okay with people?
Yeah.
And Salwa, Manu can talk very, very fast.
Then I have to make sure we finish it. No, thanks very much for these useful comments, as I was hearing them, I realized that many of the things have not been covered or elaborated, so thank you for highlighting all of these. So going by the series of comments, so Grace, you said further discussion on governance is required. What is inhibiting them? From them. So there are, in urban context, there are multiple problems, and this partly also answers Sarvar's Rai's question on, why not that model. What we find is that, in the current, the rate of growth, the rate of change in capital cities is so phenomenal that the government is always on a back foot. They are always in a state where they are overwhelmed by the sense of responsibility. And so partly while you are angry with them, you also pity them that they don't have the budgets and the capacity to be able to respond. So that is one side to it. The other side is that many of these settlements, and particularly the area that we are working in, is an informal settlement. It's not a planned settlement. So it's a dilemma for the government to provide them the same level of services as other cities, other parts of the city, because then the taxpayers will ask them questions as to why they are also getting the services when they are not paying any property taxes. So, and that's a huge debate again in the cities. So they have to actually show that, well, they are doing it only for sake of humanity and that, for survival, because it is the governance role to provide basic survival for their citizens. So, and then that would mean that, okay, community toilets, no individual toilets, only electricity, light poles, but not house connections, things like that. They have their own definition. So So sometimes that is an inhibiting factor that is there. And so if I may just jump into your question, is that, I mean, what we are doing, Surabhai, is actually the same as what you're saying. We are organizing the citizens around these issues, which are often not very clear and tangible. You know, they are more concerned about whether the, you know, in their own neighborhood, whether the sweepers are coming every day, whether the electricity, street lights are, you know, are functioning or not. They don't look at the larger risk problems, like if they are dumping garbage, then the next neighborhood would be getting affected by the floods. So this is actually way of organizing citizens, and then they put a pressure on the government to do that, exactly that. But having said that, what we are also saying is that citizens not just put pressure, but they also offer themselves as volunteers, as proactive citizens. So, you know, they have created, for example, a WhatsApp group in which the government officials are there. And so they do the same thing. They find something wrong, they send a picture on WhatsApp, and then there is an action taken, and the government feels, the official who's on the group says, well, I've taken action on this. So that's happening, and that's one way. But by showing themselves as volunteers, they create a, you know, it's an engagement process. They create friends in government and to get their job done, basically, you know. So sometimes a confrontationist kind of thing is good when it is about in rights and it is about basic things that need to be met. But sometimes when it is about, you know, a higher level intervention, then you know, making friends with the government helps in getting their job done. So I think that it's a mix of both. There is your question about the role of other groups besides youth. Yes, other groups have been there, like the market trader associations have been very active. Now, market trader association, is a representative group of small shopkeepers, you know, and for them, one day of a disaster, meaning their shop will be closed and so they'll lose their daily income, which is a disaster for them, you know. They are not big traders or anything. So they look at it from that point of view, that how do you ensure that they don't have to close their shops or their small businesses, and they get involved in infrastructural issues like fire, safety, like electricity, continuous supply, and no short circuits, stuff like that. Likewise, women's groups have been involved also in looking at security of children especially, and the cleanliness around their colony. So different groups have their own agendas there, and it's interesting to see how they negotiate to evolve consensus. And sometimes a very articulate and a powerful person has his or her way in setting the agenda for the citizen forum. But we allow that to happen because it's a very natural democratic process of debate and countering each other. As long as there is a very clear conclusion and a charter being developed by the citizen forum. You spoke about the WASH. I can elaborate that. I mean, basically it meant better service delivery, improvement of the community toilets, and providing separate facilities for women in the community. Lighting issue, which Happy pointed out again, you know, especially in night, women found it very difficult to go to community toilets. So improving the services there. Apart from SEEDS, who are the other NGOs, CSOs supporting? So besides this, Citizen Forum is actually a federation of smaller
community-based organizations, neighborhood associations, market trader associations. Some of these institutions are formally recognized by the government, but there are also informal groups like youth sports clubs. You know, these are there for every neighborhood. So they came together when it was about saving their space for playing cricket. You know, that's our national, you know, biggest pastime. About the sustainability, I'll add a little bit. The interesting part is that we have now been working for almost 4 years with that forum. So it has taken that much time to build that institution. But for the first time, just 2 months ago, they have started taking fees, membership fees. And they've had an election earlier this year. I think these are two very clear indicators that this forum is now becoming independent and self-sustaining. And that election went through the usual, you know, mudslinging and politics and everything, so, which is good. And, you know, it's part of democracy. And just to clarify your question about teasing, I mean, it's basically harassment issues. And, you know, a recent study has pointed out that students, especially girl students beyond the age of 15, are dropping out because of violence on the streets from schools. So there is a dropout there. And so this has become a huge issue about violence against women, and in various forms, from domestic violence to violence on the streets. And that violence on the streets could be anything from, you know, remarks being made at girls passing to, you know, cases of rape and, you know,
grouping.
Yeah, so grouping in public areas. So this has become a huge issue in India right now. And a lot of citizen helplines have been set up by the government. The Supreme Court is on it. So there is something. So that invariably comes up as a huge issue when we are speaking to citizen groups as to problems related to that. About I think we've spoken about the youth part. Any funds from communities from other schemes? Your question. Yes, there is. So one of the functions of this citizen forums is to be able to connect with the government and ask for funding, which is available through the national government schemes. So national government makes. You know, they have like right now we have something called Clean India campaign, which is actually right now world's biggest public service, public health campaign, some $1 trillion campaign, something like that. And what it is doing is national government is making these funds available to local governments to build toilets, to clean streets, to you know, do a whole lot of things under the cleanliness. Swachh Bharat Abhiyan. And so under, you know, so citizen groups are being trained as to how you can actually leverage those funds from the local government. It's not easy. You have to fill forms. You have to know that there is a scheme that exists. You know, left to the government, they don't care. You know, if the money doesn't get utilized in the budget, they'll just send it back. It's not their money anyway. If they can pocket some money by, you know, giving it to some contractors, then that's a separate thing. But invariably, they don't spend that budget. So one of the jobs of these groups is to actually make them spend that money, you know, in public schemes. Yes, give your question about citizen versus people. I mean, citizen is, yes, there is a slightly legal connotation to that. Citizens here means they are legally residing there. You know? So they have some. I mean, we talk about citizen rights and citizen charter. So
the word citizen is mentioned in the constitution.
In the constitution,
both in India and
Pakistan. Yeah.
Yeah, but you say also it's. area is most informal.
Informal.
So and not legal, or the residence is legal or not legal.
Mm-hmm.
So are the citizen? Huh?
Yeah, I mean they. I mean citizen. The, using the word citizen here gives a sense of being right holders. You know, and that just gives it a little more formal definition. But we didn't think too much into it, to be honest. In fact, it has a different name that I've used here in the case study. It's called Kurvitilli of the Prairies. You know. I think that answered it. But thanks very much for these comments. We'll revise the case study.
Thanks very much, Pano, and thank you, readers, and thank you for the attention. Great, we can all have a coffee or a tea now.
Back in at 4 p.m. 25 minutes. No.
5:02.